We are very privileged this morning to have as our chapel speaker Melinda Delahoy. She is the recently appointed special consultant to the president of the Christian Action Council, and she travels across the United States establishing new crisis pregnancy centers. From 81 to 83, she served as director of education for Americans United for Life, provided research and education on bioethical issues such as abortion, infanticide, genetic screening for organizations such as the Office of the United States Surgeon General and Department of Health and Human Services. She's very active as a writer and public speaker on many pro-life issues. She's the author of Fighting for Life, published in 1981 by Servant Publications, and she's co-authored a number of other works, including a couple on the question of life and the abortion issues, and one dealing with Francis Schaeffer, called Francis Schaeffer, The Man and His Work. She's written articles for various Christian publications and appeared on radio and television programs, including James Dobson's Focus for the Family. She has a BA in philosophy from the University of California, an MA in philosophy of religion from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School, and she's married to William Delahoy, who works with the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Raleigh, and who served for a full 10-year term as one of our trustees. He's recently retired from the board or kicked off the board or whatever we do after 10 years. But he's also with her today, along with Maggie, I believe, and she has four children, Will, Maggie, Benjamin, and Abigail. They live here in Raleigh. We're very pleased to have her bring our chapel message this morning, and I'm going to let her come and have the rest of the time, and she can conclude the service in any way that she sees fit. Melinda, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you for having me here this morning. Abortion is that issue in our society that just will not go away. I'm sure that 20 years ago, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in Roe v. Wade and basically gave us abortion on demand, overturned the laws of all the 50 states regarding abortion, that they thought with that decision and the companion decision that came with it, that they would be settling the issue for Americans. But instead, what they opened up was warfare in American society. And we knew 20 years ago, those of us and those who taught in the seminaries and who studied the theological perspectives and the moral perspectives on abortion, that indeed this was not an issue that would go away, because it was not simply a battle against flesh and blood. It was not a political issue primarily. It was a moral and theological issue that touched at our very deepest views about God, about man, about what it means to be a member of the human family. And it's because the issue touches so deeply on the sanctity of life that it simply will not go away in our society. Because those who understood, those who knew Jesus Christ, and those who knew what it means to love God and to hold a view of the sanctity of all human life, knew that we could never have a law on our books that would allow us to kill the most innocent members of that family and stand as a nation. So the war began after that decision. The battleground is the issue of abortion, and the casualties are 30 million unborn children in the last 20 years, and the women, their mothers and the families and the fathers and all those who have suffered in that decision that's been made. So where we are today has become such a crucial issue, because 20 years into this, we find ourselves with a new administration in Washington that is quite unfavorable to a sanctity of life position. We find that the courts have ruled against us consistently, and whereas organizations and lawyers, pro-life attorneys for the past 15 years have been strategizing to bring a case before the Supreme Court that would overturn Roe v. Wade, when that case came, we found that even though we thought we had the majority, the votes were not there. And we've come to see that even in the 11th hour of the decision made last summer, that the court was almost ready to overturn Roe, and yet Justice O'Connor changed her decision at the last minute. We cannot put our confidence in the high court of the land. We cannot put our confidence in Congress. Congress is now debating whether or not they will give federal funds to to poor women so that they can fund the ability and the right to take the life of their unborn child. The Freedom of Choice Act, which would make abortion on demand the law of the land through a congressional act, will soon be brought up before the House and the Senate. We do not have the votes to keep those acts in some way from becoming law in the land. And at the same time, we have a president who very early on, from the first days of his administration, did everything he could to use the office of the president to overturn any kind of edict or law that might in any way protect unborn human life. So we find ourselves at a crossroads. And as I travel around the country, the question that is always on people's minds and hearts is, where do we stand and where do we go from here? And it's an opportunity to say that on the one hand, we face the most profound crisis that we could be facing on the issue of abortion in this country, a crisis that is both internal and external. You see, externally, we face a hostile administration, a court that will not act decisively on behalf of life, and a Congress with a pro-abortion majority. But those are only the external factors that we face in this crisis. The internal factors are much more dangerous, much more saddening to those of us who love Jesus Christ, because the latest data that we have on abortion is that 71% of the women who have an abortion come from the church. 71% of the over 1.2 million women a year who have an abortion will tell a counselor or an abortion clinic operator that they come from within the church. Now, that statistic includes the Catholic Church, all of the mainline denominations, but of that 71%, 16% of those women will openly identify themselves as being evangelicals. Now, if 16% will identify themselves as that, imagine how many are, but will never say that to anyone. Several years ago, leaders in the pro-life community commissioned the Gallup organization to do a poll for us on attitudes toward abortion in America. And Gallup came back to us with some very startling and sobering information. They said that even if we were to overturn Roe v. Wade tomorrow, there is no way that the country would be ready to stop abortion. That people were not educated about the issue, that they didn't understand what it was about, that in their minds it was simply a woman's right to choose, and that no overturning of a Supreme Court decision would take abortion out of American society. But more alarming than that, when they polled members of evangelical churches, they found that the majority were very much ambivalent on abortion. They were afraid to impose their personal views about what they might feel is right and wrong on a pluralistic society. Clergy were ambivalent. They wanted to do something on the issue, but they were paralyzed. They didn't know what to do. What we found is that we have the people of God in this country barely more pro-life than someone walking down the street who's never set foot in a church. The people in our pews have embraced the same view of toleration that allows everything to be okay that someone who never has understood the gospel of Jesus Christ would believe. There's barely any difference between the two. And the clergy, although wanting to help, don't seem to know what to do. That's the internal crisis, and that's much more disturbing to us than any of the externals we might face in American society. But what our analysts and our pollsters also told us was that if there is to be a change, if we are to see abortion taken out of American society, if we're going to see any laws overturned, if we're going to see any lives saved, it will be because there's revival in the Church of Jesus Christ. That apart from the action on the part of God's people and those who know and understand what it means to protect human life, unless those people are moved to act, we will never see a change. Because the precedents in American society and the forces of the media and the pro-abortion movement and all the externals that bombard us day after day are so strong and are so clear, they send such a clear, strong voice to a woman that abortion is your only alternative. Those voices are so strong that unless God's people can stand and come together and act on behalf of unborn children and women in crisis, this issue will never change. We will never see those statistics change. we will continue to have abortion on demand. So we knew what we had perceived all along, that unless the people of God acted, there would be no change. And that is why I tell people that not only do we face a profound crisis, both externally and internally within the church, but at the same time, we face a magnificent opportunity to do three things in this country. First and most importantly, we have an opportunity to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ and the help and hope and healing and love of our Savior to millions of women who honestly believe abortion is their only alternative. There's an opportunity, there is a mission field in this country to millions of women who want more than anything to know that they do not have to take the life of their unborn child. Women who have had abortions. Of the women who come into our crisis pregnancy centers around the country, 43% of the women who come in have already had an abortion. That's a very high statistic. I want to talk a little bit later about what that woman feels like when she comes and talks to one of our counselors. But believe me, the wound in her heart is so deep. She is so shattered, and her self-esteem is so low that only the love and grace of Jesus Christ can heal that heart. And friends, there's a mission field right here with women and family and teenage girls all around us. We have an opportunity to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ. But we also have an opportunity to equip and empower and enable the Church of Jesus Christ to stand as a beacon of light in American society. You see, we have an opportunity to educate and to train and to prepare our people to minister the word of truth, what it means to defend and protect human life, and how that flows from the gospel of Jesus Christ and the truth of God as creator and giver of life. We have an opportunity to share that truth, but we also have an opportunity to train our people to minister the deed of caring. You see, with all of our education, with Dr. Schaefer and all the work that he did years ago, and with all the good resources and all the books that are available, what we're finding is that it's not making any difference. Christians may know the truth, but they don't seem to know how to take that truth and minister the deed of love and caring to that woman and her unborn child. We've got to have both the word of the truth of the sanctity of life and the deed of caring. The truth of Jesus Christ and the love of Jesus Christ coming together and enabling those who know him to speak that truth in love to our culture, to equip, to enable, to empower the Church of Jesus Christ to speak to a dying society. And thirdly, we have the opportunity, if we take advantage, to stop abortion in America. It is true that only the church and the rising up of God's people will bring those statistics down. Only the caring and the love and the practical alternatives that we offer in the name of Jesus Christ can stand up against the onslaught that a woman faces in American society to take the life of her unborn child. You see, at the time when we look around and see all the doors in Washington closing, at the time when we realize that many of the public opportunities we have had to speak out against life may not be there any longer because of congressional edicts, because of Supreme Court decisions, because of what a presidential administration might be, whatever doors might be closing, there is one door that God continues to open up, and that is the door of ministering the love and hope of Jesus Christ through crisis pregnancy centers around the country. You see, the movement has evolved so much in the past 20 years. In 1973, it was primarily Catholics who had a strong vision of life and began the pro-life movement in this country. Evangelicals really did not understand that well what was happening, and at that time, we didn't have the resources to put this together and to begin to go out in the pews. It wasn't until later in the 70s and in the 80s when Dr. Schaefer began to write Whatever Happened to the Human Race and began to come forward as the leading evangelical on the sanctity of life issues that thousands of believers began to understand what it means to protect human life. Evangelicals became involved. We became involved at the grassroots level and also at the higher levels. Dr. Dobson came on board in a wonderful way And then Gary Bauer, Southern Baptist with Dr. Land have begun. There's a wonderful movement of evangelicals who have come alongside our Catholic friends to take this issue to the American public. But now we look around and we see that some of our public policy work and all of the legal strategies that we've had may not have any effect, at least for the next 4 years, and with Clinton's appointees to the Supreme Court, many decades longer than that. But what God has done through these years, almost through the back door, is raise up at the grassroots level hundreds of thousands of believers who in their local communities said, being pro-life means more than being anti-abortion. And we will begin a crisis pregnancy center, a caring center for women in our community. And we will speak to her not only to provide any of the practical needs she might have, but we will train the people in our churches and the Christians in our community to speak to her about the love and healing of Jesus Christ. So that when that woman walks through our doors, whether she's pregnant, whether she's previously had an abortion, whether she's facing that now, we can say to her, we love you, we care about you, we will meet your needs, and we are here to minister the love and hope of Jesus Christ. And with that in mind, hundreds of thousands of believers with no money, with no backing, with only prayer and determination, got together, and now in this country, our organization, CareNet, that I work with through the Christian Action Council, has over 450 crisis pregnancy centers, and more coming in every day. Our job is to equip the Church of Jesus Christ and Christians in the local community to minister to that woman and her unborn child. And this movement, led by the Holy Spirit, taken, given feet by God's people in their local communities, is growing leaps and bounds. And as we see the doors in Congress and the doors in Washington close to us, we see God opening up unprecedented opportunities to minister at the local level in this way and to develop the most effective, comprehensive network of care for women and their unborn children that this country has ever seen. That's where we are today. But you see, our vision goes beyond that. Our vision goes beyond that to the Church of Jesus Christ. Because you see, right now, our centers around the country operate mostly independently in their community. They have church support. Many of their volunteers come from local evangelical churches. But they're not connected with the local body in any intrinsic, essential way. What if everyone of those 450 care centers and the hundreds that will come on board within the next few years were located close to and closely associated with a local body of believers? Suppose that there was a coordinator within the congregation, a member of that congregation, who took it upon themselves to work within their congregation to educate their members on the sanctity of life issues, on what abortion is really about, and at the same time to equip and enable them to minister through that local crisis pregnancy center. What if a woman, feminist, liberal, pro-abortion in every way, came through the doors of one of those churches and sat down and had every intention of voting pro-abortion and speaking out for it, but began to see through the ministry of that church and believers in that church, first, that God has a different plan, that he speaks differently through his word? And what if she began to see through members of that church working in a local crisis pregnancy center that women for whom she thought abortion was the only answer, seeing them ministered to with real love and healing and compassion? What if she began to say that? You see, that's where the heart's changed. And that's where that woman sits in that pew and becomes involved in that church and walks out that door and says, I can't vote for a pro-abortion candidate. I can't give my money to Planned Parenthood because I have seen that there's a different way, that there's a better way, that there's real love and there's real compassion and that abortion is unnecessary. And I don't want that. You see, that's the kind of life-changing perspective that happens when the churches of God and the person sitting in the pews begins to catch the vision for what it means to understand the word of truth and then to be equipped and enabled and empowered through those in their congregation to minister the deed of caring. You see, what if we even went beyond that? What if our organization is in the process now of developing a comprehensive chastity program for teenagers? Because you see, we realize that we can't just begin with the woman who's coming into a crisis pregnancy center and thinks she might be pregnant. We've got to begin with the 10, 11, 12-year-old girls in the inner city, in the suburbs, who think that no one cares enough about them that there is no reason why they should postpone sexual activity, who have such a low self-esteem and who even at that young age see no way out, or who were so abused and neglected by their own fathers that they will do anything for that love and acceptance they so desperately seek. And most of the time, that anything means sexual activity. What if we had a program that spoke the love and truth of Jesus Christ on those kinds of issues to those young men and women? What if we could begin to reach them before they begin to go through some of the terrible things that might wait for them? And what if, let me give you an example. Recently I spoke at a church in Fresno, California, and a 15-year-old girl came up to me afterwards and said, she and her mother were there in the church and they were members of the church. She said, you know, my best friend just came to me yesterday and told me that she'd had an abortion. She said, I don't think she's told anybody. And she was crying and she wanted to know if I could understand how she felt. You see, it was a very typical situation. The pregnant girl's boyfriend was up for a football scholarship. They were seniors in high school. All of his college money depended upon his life going on as if nothing had ever happened. His parents talked with her parents. There was pressure put on the girl that this was the only alternative she would ever have. There was no discussion. It was simply something that had to be done. And here was this little 15-year-old girl feeling that she had no one that she could talk to except her best friend. Now let me tell you, what that little 15-year-old internalizes now will not be so internalized when she's 20 and 30. The anger and the guilt and the bitterness and the shame and so much of the hardness that we see in our radical feminist leaders today comes from that hurt and that shattering of the heart long, long ago that could never be expressed and never be talked about. And for many of them, rather than the church being a beacon of light and hope, it was the last place that they would ever set foot in. So here is that little 15-year-old girl. But what if her friend was in a congregation where there were counselors that knew how to talk to her, where there was good, biblically based material that said, look, you've made a mistake, but Jesus loves you. And he forgives you. And you weren't standing there alone on that day that you had to walk into the abortion clinic. He was right there beside you. There were many things beyond your control. But he loves you. And he wants to heal you now. What if that little 15-year-old could walk into one of our congregations and instead of letting those roots of anger and bitterness and shame take hold in her life, instead the roots of love and healing and compassion could begin to take root there? That's a life that could be changed forever. And we have the opportunity in our congregations to equip and enable and empower our people to speak that word. Let me tell you about a group of churches on the south side of Chicago who work with one of our pregnancy care centers. Southside Crisis Pregnancy Center is in a little storefront building in one of the worst areas of Chicago. No one goes in or out of that clinic without an escort. Women who want to come to the clinic have to be escorted in or out because it's not safe to walk in those neighborhoods. All around the church are some wonderful black churches with no money, lots of spirit, and lots of ideas. And they have banded together around this crisis pregnancy center. And they realized that one of the most important needs in their community was with single mothers, that they had to reach out to those women who were trying to raise their children with nobody. We were seeing a lot of those women in our centers, but all around us and sitting in the churches were hundreds of women who needed to know about Jesus Christ. So our crisis pregnancy center began a ministry to those women, a retreat twice a year for single moms, babysitting provided, as many scholarships as they could scrape together, a time for them to come apart with Bible studies and great exposition from the Word, but also with support, practical seminars, whatever they might need. wasn't open just to Christian women. It was open to anyone in that community. Out of those two-day retreats twice a year has come a ministry from the churches to the women in that community. Once a month, mechanics from the church will go out in the church parking lot and service free of charge the women's cars, give them any kind of practical mechanical advice they may need about their cars. They've started computer training programs for women who need the job skills to get off welfare and get out into the marketplace. They've set up co-ops in the afternoon to care for the children, Christian-based daycare for their children, so that they don't need to worry about their safety while they're getting their job skills or while they're at work. This community, with no money, but with the vision of God and the vision of what God's people can do in a community, have come together around this crisis pregnancy center to meet the spiritual and emotional and practical needs of women who are absolutely the least of these in our society. But not only that, they realized that they had to reach these young men and women in the middle schools. Long before high school, they had to reach these women. They had to reach these youth. And they began a chastity kind of curriculum in the middle schools. It was so successful that now the director of our center serves on the school board advisory for these issues in the public schools, because what they saw was that these 11 and 12-year-old girls were gaining so much self-esteem, realizing that they were worth waiting for, that they didn't have to give themselves in this way. They saw their lives change so dramatically that even though they couldn't accept the Christian principles, the results were so good that they couldn't deny what was happening. And right now, they've opened up a youth center close to the Crisis Pregnancy Center that will be a place of opportunity and support for young teens in that community. Now, this is what changes abortion in America. This is when the people of God band together, when churches come around, and when people in the pews are trained and equipped to minister the word of truth, because no one's hiding that abortion is wrong here. No one's hiding that God is the author of life and that the sanctity of life worldview flows from who he is as creator. But along with that, they're addressing the practical, spiritual, emotional needs of the women and the young people in their community. And that's our vision for the future, that we might so equip the people of God that churches in the local community will come around a crisis pregnancy center in their community, will train and equip their people to speak to youth, that they will minister the love and the healing of Jesus Christ. I want to talk to you for a moment about the kind of woman that comes into our centers, just to show you a little bit more of what it is that Jesus is doing in the lives of these women. You see, I think that many of us, and I used to think this too, think that a woman who walks into one of our centers or into an abortion clinic is proud, she's haughty, she's determined, she doesn't care about that child, she wants to get on with her life and just get this out of the way. Very rarely is that the case. Some of the best surveys out have shown that women who did have abortions, up to 90% of those women would have chosen not to have that abortion if they thought there was any alternative to that. One author, Frederica Matthews Green, has written so eloquently that a woman doesn't choose abortion like she chooses an ice cream cone or chooses to buy a Porsche. She chooses it like an animal that's caught in a trap and gnaws off its leg in order to save itself, and does so at tremendous pain and tremendous self-loss. You see, that woman, when she has that abortion, whether she can acknowledge it or not, something